This is the made man, Gino DiCapo, and you're listening to Wrestling Cheers. Capisce?
Making your way in the world today takes everything you got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everybody knows your name. That troubles are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name. You wanna go where you can see that troubles are all the same. You wanna go where everybody knows your name.
And welcome back to Wrestling Cheers, where everybody knows your name, especially when you do karaoke. Welcome to Wrestling Cheers, where we like to talk about things going on in the Northeast Ohio independent wrestling scene. We preview shows, we review shows, and sometimes we even have interviews along the way. This week, it is an interview episode with OCW's Flex Jordan. Now, I am your host, I am Heavy Set. And like I said, this is Wrestling Cheers. We are brought to you by the Trending Topics Network and NEO Sports Insiders. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Podbean, WrestlingCheers.podbean.com. And hit us up on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Facebook.com/WrestlingCheers, Twitter.com/WrestlingCheers, and Instagram.com/WrestlingCheers. Email, if you so choose a desire, WrestlingCheers@gmail.com. And we still have the merch store over at WhatAManeuver.net. Like I said, much like last week, where we sat down with PB Smooth, this week we are sitting down with Flex Jordan. Now, these were recorded about 24 hours difference from each other, maybe technically a little less, because PB was after a show, but Flex was before a show earlier the next day. So, you know, everything within the realm of that time. So I don't know what's changed since I recorded this intro, but we also cut into MGK and Eminem, so we talk a little bit about that. So if it's out of date already and they both release some sort of different track, like, yeah, that's something we touch on. So we only really, if we talk about anything, it's, you know, Rap God or Rap Devil and Killshot. And I want to give a big, huge shout out and thank you, as always, for the hospitality of Jeremy from OCW, the owner. Always provided me with the access backstage before the show to record the interviews with them. And I thoroughly enjoy it. We talk about a little bit of the differences at the beginning of this interview of things that have changed since the 2 months or 3 months since I had been to the OCW arena, but only 2 months since the OCW show. So I don't want to have this be too long. So I guess much like last week, we'll have a commercial before and after the interview, so I guess we'll cut to that, and then we'll be back with Flex Jordan.
Center stage, it's the new race, center stage.
Hi there, I'm Ben Center. I'm the host of the brand new podcast, Center Stage. It's a place where I like to bring people on that have interesting stories that I feel the world needs to hear. I talk to authors, filmmakers, burlesque dancers, wrestlers, and I bring on my friends and we deep dive topics about wrestling. So if you want to listen to the podcast, and I hope you do, it's Center Stage, S-E-N-T-E-R, like my last name, Center Stage. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Spreaker. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's Center Stage NX on Twitter. That's Center Stage NX on both Twitter and Instagram. If you want to follow me, Ben Center, on Twitter, it is Center Club on Twitter. You know what you should do is keep listening to Wrestling Cheers. It's the best podcast about independent wrestling here in Ohio. I want to give a big thanks to all the guys from Wrestling Cheers, especially Justin for this opportunity. Keep listening to Wrestling Cheers. Listen to Wrestling Stage, Center Stage. It's my own podcast. I'm going to leave that in. Listen to Center Stage after you listen to Wrestling Cheers. Let's get back to the show, shall we?
Center Stage.
All right, we are back here on the podcast. I don't know how this sounds. We're in an old classroom. First time I've ever done this in the OCW arena is an old classroom. Instead of like doing it in the stairwell like we normally do, we're here in this classroom, and I'm here with one of the very first people, if not, I mean, I think there's more, that have actually came to me and said, when the hell can I be on the podcast? So we have now former OCW Ohio Heritage Champion, this second former champion on the show, but we have Flex Jordan. How's it going, Jordan?
Good. How are you doing?
Dude, it's been 2 weeks, I mean, 2 months away from this place, and I admit I kind of missed it.
Yeah, I mean, last show, even though I wish I was talking to you right now with that, you know, title around my waist still,
yeah,
it was a great show. You know, top to bottom, the card was amazing.
I mean, two title changes is big.
Yeah.
Like, you had your match, and then you had the Electra Company finally overcoming that mountain and becoming the I've been too many places lately, the OCW Tag Team Champions, and that was pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Truck and Jake, I mean, they're two really young and hungry guys, and they deserve it. You know, they've worked their tails off to kind of get that tag team title around their waist, and I'm proud of them. Surprised a lot of guys in the back, you know. You know, the Warhorse is a great, great physical tag team, unstoppable almost, so it kind of surprised some guys in the back, but I'm happy to see them with those tag team championships.
And it's cool to see guys like them travel.
Yeah.
When I see them pop up at different places, especially as a tag team, because I feel like Truck is a guy who has popped up places without Jake.
Right.
But them popping up together, it's like, okay, like, this could be something that catches on. So I want to see them pop up as many places as possible.
Yeah, I remember when I first, you know, started traveling a lot, when I was first getting into the business, I had about, you know, three or four different tag team partners, depending on what show it would be. So, you know, a few we'd won championships with. But yeah, I mean, just depending on where you're at, you know, your partner could be different. So developing that chemistry can really be challenging at times, but good for them.
And I think those are two guys that, I mean, it's very reminiscent of Shawn Michaels and Diesel.
Yep.
And they have that chemistry together. And it's odd that it's Diesel and a Truck. Like, we're comparing those, like, those two things, but they do have that chemistry. It is very much a tall guy, shorter guy chemistry, but it still works. And like I said, just seeing them pop up other places is really, really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I'm proud of them, and, you know, I'm happy from what I've seen when I first started coming back to OCW, from, you know, where they were to where they are now. Obviously, the tag team champions, they've grown leaps and bounds.
So, man, explain a little bit about yourself. Like, I try not to do the generic stuff, but you are not as big of a name in Ohio, and I want, for anybody who has no idea who you are, to learn a little bit about you.
Yeah, so lead athlete Flex Jordan. I started training in 2013, the end of 2013. Okay. I trained down at the Central Ohio, well, now the Ohio Pro Wrestling Academy, down in Newark, Ohio, with James Avery, Tommy Chill, and Cyrus Poe. So some of the guys in my class, Levi Connors, you know, was one of the graduates, Bruce Gray, when he came back from, you know, being a referee, he started wrestling. But we had a good group of guys. Duke Beefhammer was another one that was in there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of, you know, I was the second class that James had ever started training. So I started in 2013, had my first booking in 2014, and kind of gone from there.
When was your first time here at OCW? Because you said you left. Like, was I here for the beginning? Because I've been around here for a little over a year.
So OCW used to run a little further south. So I was, you know, Robbie was still here, Juice was still here, Jimmy was still here.
Yeah.
This was kind of more in the 2014-ish time frame.
So I think that was the Jeff Cannon.
Yeah. Era. So yeah, so that was kind of the Jeff Cannon era. So that's when I ran here. Keith, the referee, was still around.
Okay.
So he's made his way up here. But yeah, so I know OCW for a brief period of time kind of quit running for a little bit, and then they started back up here in the Akron area.
Which I love, because OCW was a company that would come up here from time to time, and they had a lot of names that I would recognize from certain shows. But it would be like, I didn't want to go down there in Southern Ohio. It's like, nothing against that. Like, now, I drive 70 every day for my works, but it's like, then that was a long way. And now it's like, okay, we're moving up in Akron, and like, we're going to be based here. And I'm like, all right, cool. Because I feel like Akron doesn't have a decent wrestling scene. There's companies that pop up around here. Like, there's one recently that I'm not going to name them, but in my opinion, they are a very subpar company. They don't even, I don't think they've ran in over a year. And it's that kind of,
inconsistency that we were missing. So we have a company now like OCW that's like not even just we're based in Akron. It's right. The fact that like we're in the OCW arena. This is where OCW runs most of the shows. And did no be like, okay, we're going to go to the OCW arena. We know what it looks like. We know how to get there. We know what to expect. It's that kind of dependability that the independent wrestling needs. So when that became around here, I was full for it.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, back before they moved up to this area, they still had a home. They still had a base location. Yeah. But it's even more so now that, like you said, now that they're in Akron, that you have the OCW arena. And you know every show is going to be here, which is awesome, especially as a competitor. You know the venue. You know the building. So you don't really have to, you know, analyze your surroundings as much.
Yeah. So. You know where the after party is going to be.
Know where the after party is going to be. Max Cabana.
Yes, and we're going to both do karaoke at some point.
Got to plug that in. You know, I'm disappointed because every time I go there, I just want to rap Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day. I can rap that whole song without even looking at the lyrics. I promise you that. It's even better than my Will Smith, you know, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Because that's a staple. I think the funny thing was I was having my girlfriend. We were talking about TV show themes. I think I had found the Orange is the New Black theme, like on Apple Music. And there's like obviously a big chunk that they cut out. So she was singing it, and then all of a sudden there's this part she didn't know. And I'm like, oh, did you know the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air song? There's a full version. She went, what? So I found the full version and I played it for her. And to me, like, that is like when I first learned that, oh, some of these TV show themes might have longer versions.
Yeah, they cut down a little bit.
I think there isn't a full video of the original?
There is a full video. Like when he, at one point, he's on an airplane, you know, actually going to Bel-Air. But it's funny because everybody knows, I shouldn't say everybody, but a lot of people know that theme song pretty well. So it's funny to see people, you know, start to sing it when they hear it. And then once the full version starts, they're like, okay.
So yeah, that's a gem because I know like that's your staple, just like my staple is, you know, Forgot About Dre.
And I love that song.
Which I don't think you were at the last one that I went to, which I haven't been here in like now 2 months, but I did like 3 different songs that I've never done.
Really?
And people were just like, I was expecting Forgot About Dre. And I think one of my biggest issues is when the first Max Cabana one I went to, which I think was the first one, there were people that I heard were overheard here. I'm like, oh, they're just doing the same songs they always do. And I'm like, okay, I get that, but I really like Forgot About Dre. I can do the whole song. I'm very proud of myself for that. But if you want something different, I'll give you something different. There's other songs that I practice to, which that sounds weird. Like, I don't know about you. Like I'll try to figure out what will be good for karaoke and I'll go on YouTube, find a karaoke video, practice it. And I'm like, if I think my voice isn't good for it, I won't do it.
Right.
But there's some that I'm just like, oh, I know this. And like my big key, especially Forgot About Dre, which I don't know if you've noticed, I won't look at the lyrics.
Yeah.
I'll purposely put my back towards the screen and just, or walk away from the screen and I'll do it like on my own.
Because you want to get the crowd involved. I mean, to me, that's the whole point of a karaoke after party. Get everybody involved. Sing songs that people want to hear.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of songs that I don't sing because I know that I'm just going to either A, butcher the lyrics, not forget, you know, forget kind of how it goes.
Yeah.
And I mean, 3, like, I'm not the best singer. I mean, I can rap a little bit, not the best singer. So I'm not going to go up there and just bore you to death with some old, you know, country song that I may like, but nobody in that bar wants to hear.
Yeah. I think for me, like, I'll pick from just songs that I know I could do. Because I've done stuff with, like, I'm trying to figure out, there's certain songs that I've looked and I'm like, I know the song, I could do the song, but I can't like hit the notes and it's going to sound like shit. Like, actually, I had a conversation with Chuck, which I got to talk to him later if we can do this. I want to do Linkin Park's In the End. That's one of my favorite Linkin Park songs, but I cannot hit Chester's vocals. And he actually admitted he could. I'm just like, well, I'll do the rap part. You do the singing part. You wouldn't kind of want to do that?
If Chuck can pull that off, that'll be pretty impressive.
The last one I went to, he did it after I left. Like he put in for it and it was just one of those things that it was taking way too long. And I'm like, I got to get home. So it might have played like shortly after I left, but I was like, I got to get out of here. Like, I think we waited a good half hour.
Yeah, every time I'm like, okay, I'm not going to do the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song. I'm going to think of something else. I sit there and I think, and I'm like, all right, I got it. Walk up and there's always a list of like 20 people. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm probably going to be gone before my name gets called.
Well, I will give the guy credit. Like, if you haven't gone up yet, he'll fast track you.
Yeah.
And then I think he'll be like, okay, maybe you've gone up a second time, but there's people ahead of you that have gone up like three or four, like he'll fast track you a little bit. But after that part, it's like, yeah, you put it in, it's going to take like 20 songs.
I mean, kudos to him for, you know, putting up with our rowdy bunch too. So
I think we did get lucky. The last one I went to, there wasn't a lot of people there, but there was still enough people doing karaoke where it's just like, okay, all right, you're going to be in like 20 songs. Maybe not even, but you're going to be in like 6-7 songs. It's
right.
Like, oh, that's going to take forever. And sometimes you get those people, you get bumped because of fast track people. And it's like, I can't complain. I've gone up 2 times already. And so if I go up a third time, like, what's the difference to me? So yeah, I always look forward to that aspect of, so when I miss OCW shows and I can't do that, I'm upset. But I've been kind of like planning in my head of like what songs I'll do this time. Like, I think in my head, I think one of the ones I want to do, I love go really old for the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Richie Valens' La Bamba. I don't know shit for Spanish, but I know all those lyrics. And Buddy Holly, True Love Ways.
Okay.
Because, like, I can hit his register. See, he doesn't get too high, but you get people, like, I'm trying to figure out their, like, I can't do, like, a Whitney, anything Whitney Houston or anything, like, Mariah Carey. And actually, I don't know if I tweeted this to you. I think between me, you.
I think Robbie.
Robbie and Jimmy. There was this list of karaoke things to try.
Yep.
And it was just like this is like the hardest level stuff to do, and like it gave you like every category of like this is the top notch. I remember one of them was Frank Sinatra's My Way.
Oh man.
And I took a listen to that and I'm like, Frank, I have your I can probably do your voice, but I don't know if I could do that song. I don't know if I could do it justice.
Really, it makes you appreciate the artist. You know, you can sing the song in your shower all you want, but when you're up in front of people trying to make sure that you're getting every note right, you're like, man, they're talented.
Yeah. And I always think it's crazy that like, there's people that don't do it. Like, I don't know. I love karaoke.
Well, obviously, you know, being a wrestler, being an entertainer, there's no point in my life where I'm ever uncomfortable being in front of a crowd or, you know, not wanting to try something new. Oh, so yeah. I guess for more of the introverted people, maybe I get it. But still, you're at a karaoke bar. Have fun. That's why we're here. To get up there and sing. Sing your heart out.
I've kind of even thought, like, if like, when I get to the point of getting married and having a reception, I kind of want to do karaoke.
I actually was in a wedding in June. Mm-hmm. And we... there's about 30 people kind of straggling at the after party. You know, it's around 11 o'clock at night. Everybody's kind of getting bored at this point. And the DJ was, you know, just playing songs. Everybody didn't really know what to do. They were kind of dancing.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, play Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day.
Yeah.
And I said, do you have a microphone? He's like, yeah. So I grabbed the microphone and I started rapping and twerking and singing Today Was a Good Day by Ice Cube. And everybody just got electric from there. And then I started, you know, the quote unquote revolution, because everybody started lining up to this DJ and playing songs that they wanted to hear and sing. So, I mean, it's kind of a way to, it's a great point by you. It's a good way to get, you know, your guest more involved.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's a good time.
Like, I think of the beginning part of like receptions, like obviously like where, you know, everybody's coming in. So you're playing like just music to keep the atmosphere. And then you do the cake cuttings and the food, and I'm doing this all out of order, but because I don't know the official order everything's supposed to go in. But there's all that. But you get to the point after all the dances are done that are ceremonious. Why not karaoke?
I mean, weddings are expensive as it is. And you're asking, even if you're not in a wedding, you're asking a lot of your guests, you know? So let them have fun. Let them enjoy it. Make them, you know, feel like they're going something that they're going to look forward to. Because I don't know about you, but there's a few weddings that I've been to and I'm like, do I really want to go to this wedding? I mean, I barely know the person, you know? I'm invited. I should probably go, you know, just to be nice. But I'm like, man, it's going to be kind of boring. And then, you know, you get to some and you're like, wow, this was definitely worth it.
Yeah. Apologies, my freaking watch went off and I'm trying to shut everything off on it. God damn you. You just updated shit and I don't know where everything is. Anyway, but no, I feel like when it comes to weddings, especially after that point, once the music starts and like we're going to start, everybody's going to get on the dance floor and dance. And like, that's the point. Like, you're going to have people who are had enough to drink where they're like, I'll go up there.
Right.
What song do you want me to do? I'll do it.
The liquid courage.
Yeah.
Kicks
like, so you'll get the people like me and you that like to do it for fun, but then you'll have the people who will probably make an ass of themselves, but that will make the night fun.
Because exactly.
You're like, it's almost like, I don't want to say a wedding gift, but it's like, okay, like let me do some entertainment instead of, I get the live band, I get the DJ stuff, but I don't know. I think that is something that's missing for wedding receptions.
It involves everybody.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, who doesn't, I mean, I don't know if I've ever been to a really bad karaoke.
No, I mean, I've been to bars where people have done some terrible karaoke, and
yeah, that happens.
But I mean, when you're going to a bar and there's karaoke, you know, that's a little bit different, I guess, if you want to mellow out. But if you're going to a karaoke bar, like we said before, like you just need to get up there and sing.
Yeah. Let's since we're into music, and we kind of talked about this before, and I hope we didn't kill it, but we can definitely talk about it again. But this, we are recording. See, this is September 22nd, actually the first day of fall. But last night, which would be last week for the listeners, I talked to PB Smooth, and we talked about MGK versus Eminem. So now this is going to be 2 weeks after recording, or close to 2 weeks after recording, and I'm hoping MGK and Eminem didn't put out more songs to make these questions, this conversation irrelevant, or just completely change the course of it. But MGK versus Eminem, I know you're obviously a rap fan, a hip-hop head. Like, what... Where's your stance? Like, how do you feel about all this?
I mean, MGK, if he releases another diss track on Eminem, then he's just burying himself even further. Eminem destroyed him, and he didn't even try, in my opinion. I don't think he really tried as hard as he could have.
That's what I think a lot of people that I know that were like, well, MGK put out a better song, because they were like, that was the best song he ever put out, but that's not the best song Eminem put out. But
he
put
out a better chorus. Than Eminem did.
That's definitely a big thing. I've heard like, well, I like the chorus. It's catchy. The beat was good. And I'm like...
And he had a video.
And
you know?
The funniest thing about that is in the first 24 hours, Eminem, when he released it on YouTube, that single of just the cover shot is like the most listened to hip-hop song or hip-hop video in the history.
Yeah.
In the first 24 hours in the history of YouTube. So yeah, you can put out a video... Eminem just put out a graphic, and it did better.
And in my opinion, I mean, you could tell MGK was really, I feel like he had these feelings brewing for a while.
Dude, me too.
And he really, really went above and beyond to try to get at Eminem, which, in my opinion, is kind of the wrong thing to do. Yeah. I watched an interview with Eminem before he actually, you know, released the diss track to MGK. And he said, and I quote, "If I tried to make a diss track about everybody who came at me after I released Kamikaze, I'd be writing diss tracks for the next 5 years."
Yeah.
So, you know, MGK finally eventually kind of got under his skin a little bit to where he's like, you know, you're annoying. I'm just going to crush your career right now. My favorite line is, I had to give you a career before I took away your career. I mean, that's totally true. I mean, I'm from the Columbus area. I know you're from the Cleveland area. Mm-hmm. So I know MGK is kind of more of a hometown hero to you, even though you're an Eminem fan.
Mm-hmm.
But besides people in my hometown that are kind of rap enthusiasts, nobody really cares for MGK.
Not a lot of people that I know in Cleveland care for MGK. That's the God honest truth. Like when he got powerbombed by Kevin Owens, everybody that I knew was just like, oh, thank God.
Right.
Like I hate MGK. And that was before then. Like at that time, I liked him. Like, he put out a lot of good stuff. But then when he targeted Eminem, I'm like, that's my childhood you're kind of going at. And, like, you could be like, because I know he's like, oh, I'm doing this for my generation. You know what? Technically, I'm older than him. But it's like, I grew up listening to him, and I'm more attached to him. Like, you kind of mentioned what the things he said in that interview. How much do you know about Proof, Eminem's best friend?
I know some. I mean, I know how much... You know, the Recovery album, what's the song? It's basically a song about Proof.
Never Over.
Never Over, yeah. Or, I mean, that is a great song. And I know, obviously I watched 8 Mile, like probably most people have, but I don't know a whole lot about Proof and a little bit about, you know, how he, you know, how much he meant to Eminem and, you know, how he died, but I don't know a whole lot about his career, per se.
I was a huge fan of his.
Really?
Like, I can say that before he died. Like when the year before he put out a solo album called Searching for Jerry Garcia, I went out and bought the special edition that came with the DVD. I didn't, the stuff I bought afterwards because I couldn't get access to when I was younger. But one thing I have is an album called Electric Kool-Aid Acid Testing, and it's only physically available on vinyl.
Really?
And it's a really, really cool see-through green vinyl. But he has a song on there that he disses Detroit rapper Esham, who had a big beef at that time with Eminem and Proof and D12 and all that. And at the end, the song is called Esham, but it's Esham. Like, it stands for something with, you know, periods. It stands for Every Sucker Has a Moment. And at the end of the song, he kind of goes off and he's just like, you know what? I'm done dissing you, Esham. Esham, quit dissing me, man. you know, this is getting old. And then he kind of says, like, if anybody else wants to diss me, guess what? I ain't even going to respond because you're just going to think this is something that I do.
Yeah.
And like when M said that stuff, I was like, that's proof. That's right there. That, like, I've heard proof say that.
Yeah.
And like, I felt like he brought up a good point because there's a lot of people like, oh, like I know a couple people were just like, oh, come on, Eminem. Like, well, you're not going to respond back. I'm losing disrespect for you. And I'm like, dude, proof said the same thing before.
Yeah. I mean,
this was like, you come off for 3 or 4 years before he died. I'm like, dude, it was the same thing. So,
I mean, when you reach that stage in your career to where you know that you've made a difference and you've done something, you don't really have anything to prove. You know, every once in a while, you're going to give the fans what they want, but Eminem doesn't have anything to prove. I think one of my favorite, I wouldn't really call it a diss track. It is, but it isn't, is Hit 'Em Up by Tupac. I'm a huge Tupac fan.
Yeah.
That song really kind of correlated, you know, the beef between him and Biggie even more, because that was after Pac got shot the first time.
Mm-hmm.
He released Hit 'Em Up, and it was just basically he went at Biggie and Bad Boys. Yeah. It was good.
Yeah, I think a lot of people say that's a definitive diss track. I'm trying to find something that rivals that, but there, everything that I know, that like, it might be better lyric-wise, but like that impact was huge. And a lot of people, they do. I mean, when it comes to rap beasts in general, people point towards Biggie and Tupac.
Right. I mean, they started it. I mean, some of that, I think, kind of came about as play. I think it was kind of going to be something less serious than it actually was when they first started.
Yeah.
But I think after Pac got shot, and I think after a lot of things happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, you got Suge Knight involved, so that's always that's always interesting. But I think after, you know, Pac got shot the first time, I think things really started to unfold a little bit more rapidly than, you know, people expected.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that it started like that. They started it. They really really took it to the next level. They took it to the highest level that anybody had ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because before them, you still had beef. Like you actually had KRS-One. He had like issues with Marley Marl.
Mm-hmm.
And I know they had their issues. You know, the Bridges Over is a historic diss track, and that's definitely towards the beginning. And then you have, which I don't know if it was before or after Biggie and Pac, but you had like Common and Ice Cube.
That would be like, I think it's a little bit after.
Yeah, I know it's right around that era. So it's like, I'm trying to remember, but I know that there's just so many. And then there's just, because people forget about all those.
Yeah.
And I think you concentrate on Pac and Biggie, and then some people will then dive into just everything Eminem, because Eminem has had issues. And that's the thing with MGK. And I'm like, dude, like, he's had beef with rappers that most people have never heard of or care about.
Yeah.
And he's beat most of them, if not all of them, just depending on how you look at it. I'm like, he went against Cannabis, Benzino, ICP, Ja Rule. I mean, that whole feud was just huge.
Yeah.
And Ja Rule never
responded.
He never recovered.
Right.
Like, the last song I remember by Ja Rule that I really liked, but that he was on his decline, was New York, New York.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hit, but he was backing away from Eminem. He was kind of backing away from 50. 50 took a couple more parting shots at him, Fat Joe, and Jadakiss after that. And I think then 50 went into his beef with the Game. Which,
yeah.
That's another. I love that beef.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
because they were both, when that beef kind of, you know, escalated, they were kind of both at the top of their careers. I think that was right after Hate It or Love It, wasn't it?
Yeah, because it was like in the middle of the documentary's run that they had issues, and then he started to leave G-Unit. I think it was like halfway through the album he officially left G-Unit, but that was obviously a part of, you know, G-Unit Records.
Yeah.
So it was, I know after that he did his own stuff, and I enjoyed it. Like, I was way more of a Game person, because I felt like 50's career after The Massacre kind of went downhill.
Yeah.
Because I look at The Massacre, it was a really, you know, high-selling album. Like, it I think it was like 1.3 million or something in the first week, and that was really huge at that time. But I think that was successful because Get Rich or Die Trying was a great album.
I mean, I appreciate and love 50 Cent, but there was no way that he was going to top Get Rich or Die Trying, no matter what he did. There were so many hits on that album. There's so many good songs. I mean, you would cycle through it, and there was not a song that you wanted to, you know, hit skip or push next. Mm-hmm. It was great.
he put a lot of work into that album. And I think the funny thing too, between that album and The Massacre, you had the beef with Ja Rule, and it was like, oh, you sing, you do this, like, you're not a real thug. And then like the next album, you know, he's singing more, and he's bringing on Olivia, which was like their version of Ashanti. And I'm like, were you mad that he was doing what you wanted to do? I mean, because he like chased off the competition and then went, oh, by the way, I'm going to do this now too.
And we kind of hit on this earlier. There's a lot of like artists who, you know, they start off big, they're the new hit.
Yeah.
And then they don't really change enough to really make people appreciate them more.
Yeah.
But they change enough to stay relevant. They try to follow the current trend.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I really respect about M is that he never really changed who he was. He's never changed his style.
Yeah.
You know, I think his voice has kind of gotten a little bit different over time.
Yeah.
I think the way he executes his lyrics is a little bit different. But I mean, he's still the same guy that he was, you know, in 98, 99.
Yeah.
His lyrics, I think, are a little bit more deeper and meaningful. Mm-hmm. But even those lyrics back then kind of hit you pretty hard, made you say, oh, wow, you know?
Yeah, I think his career took a left turn, just a turn in general. And the corner of it is the curtain call.
Yep.
Because, I mean, that was the greatest hits album. Then he took a long break. But everything that happened in that break really fucked him up.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about the drugs. I mean, he was always on it, but he started to get off of it. I've heard him talk about how he actually gained a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And his big moment where he was like, I have to do something. He was out in public and he overheard someone go like, oh, is that Eminem? No, he's too fat. And he was just like, well, I gotta change my life if like that's
right.
What's happening. And then obviously we touched on like Proof Dying. I think that killed him.
Yeah.
Like when he talked about like the track that got me on Kamikaze was Stepping Stones, because I was being a big Proof fan, I was a big D12 fan.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd always wanted another album. But when he kind of like laid everything out on the table, I was like, you know what? I don't know if a D12 album would be good without Proof. I felt Proof helped make Eminem better.
Yeah.
And also he was like that glue for the group. So once he was gone, that actually took a big element out of them, and there was nobody that could fill it. So when he basically says, hey, I can't do D12 anymore. And you look basically during that break, his career just changed. So when he did come back out with Relapse and Recovery, he did sound different. He talked about how he was on drugs and he was flushing it all out. And I think that really changed Eminem we knew back in the mid to early 2000s. So like he's changed, but I think it's that evolving you do as an adult and as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
That's the other thing I've always heard when people talk about like, oh, they sold out, they did that, this and that. I'm like, sometimes you get older and you as an artist, you want to experiment.
Right.
But there's also just getting older and you're just like, I'm not about that anymore. Like, I'm going to do this instead. It's almost why I really respect Dre for a guy who's came out with only a handful of albums in his whole career. But when he comes out with a new album, everybody goes crazy.
Yeah, I mean, because everybody's waiting for it and they want to hear it. You know,
yeah.
When you are at that level to where people are anticipating your next album drop,
because mm-hmm.
you don't do it very often, then you know that you're doing something right.
And then like, it goes back with, you know, if we circle back to MGK and M, that Eminem has, early in his career, he had a better start off
mm-hmm.
than MGK. And I don't know if anybody can defend that, because I looked at where they charted the highest on the Billboard Top 200. For the first three like full-length major release albums. That doesn't count Infinite, because that is technically an album, but it wasn't like a major record label release. So you could talk about Slim Shady LP, Marshall Mathers LP, and Eminem Show, and then whatever the three MGK records, like Lace Up, General Mission, and there's a third one that I didn't even know about.
Yeah.
And that actually reflects the record sales, because M's first three albums went charted the highest, 2, 1, and 1.
Yeah.
MGK was 4, 4, and the one that I didn't know about, 8.
I mean, that's, it's pretty bad.
I mean, I feel like that's good, but at the same time, if you're comparing,
it's not M.
Yeah, you're comparing yourself to M. Like, he went on up between 1 and 2, and he managed to maintain it to 3. I don't know what Encore did, but I felt like it had to be at least top 5. And I think I look at it too, like, look what Eminem went up against in those days.
I mean, in Recovery, he states in a song that he's like, I would have went against, you know, Lil Wayne and Kanye, but I knew I would have got it handed to me.
Yeah.
Because he knew at that point in their careers, they were so much better than he was, because he wasn't in the right place.
Yeah.
He humbled himself to know that fact. And a lot of rappers don't do that. They'll go at anybody hoping that they're going to get a hit out of it.
It's an ego game.
Yeah.
I've heard someone explain this and I'm like, wow, that, I mean, just rap in general and hip hop is everybody goes out there and says, I'm the best. So when the person next to you comes up and steps up and says, I'm the best, you'd look and go, well, I have to show them why I'm better than this person.
Right.
So there's going to be those conflicts. I think as long as we don't get to the Biggie Pac stage, that was actually one of my biggest issues with what MGK said. There was two things that he talked about that I'm just like, I rolled my eyes at. Everything being like, I'm old. I mean, you're old and I'm young. And also like, I still do drugs and you don't. I'm just like, being 32, I'm like, oh, shut up, dude.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, think about it this way, too. You don't advertise a concert. It's out of the blue. You got a venue. You put MGK's face on a poster or you put Eminem's face on a poster. Who do you think is going to draw a bigger crowd? Eminem.
Oh, Eminem.
Every time. So it doesn't matter his age. Eminem could be 65 years old,
mm-hmm.
and MGK could still be 25, whatever he is. And people are going to go to an Eminem show because exactly. That's what they want to see. They don't care about MGK as much. So to even try to compare age to, you know, what you've done in your career just isn't even relevant at all.
But the other thing is, like, he kept talking about how he would body Eminem and maybe like, oh, like say that stuff to my face. And I'm just like, dude, like, stop.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you two were face to face. You're not even throwing the first punch.
I mean, He's wrote lyrics about how he physically, how he would dissect a human being. I mean, I wouldn't want to mess with Eminem. So no,
like,
matter.
I mean, I don't think Eminem's that crazy. Eminem was very, because he came from Detroit.
Right.
And Detroit has that history of like guys like Isham and like ICP, where they, as much, I don't care what people think about them, because I'm a former ICP fan. Oh, hell, I'm actually, by the time this gets released, I'm going to an ICP concert. I don't care to admit it. But when you dissect their music, it's like horror. And you look at like Relapse, there's a horror aspect to it.
Yeah.
So it's like Eminem is just playing a character. He's writing all this. I'm like, I don't think Eminem's going to go out and like kill somebody.
No.
Like, but everything that MGK's saying, I feel like it's at that, maybe it's because I'm older, but it's like, man, like, it's just like, oh, like I'm young. I'm like, he was trying to prove something. I'm just like, that's not how you prove stuff.
It's
like,
not.
Eminem, like everything he said in his rhymes, and even if you go through it with a fine tooth comb, there's just so much to digest. Like, I don't know if it's intentional or not. He makes references to his own work.
Yeah.
Like he mentioned like Nail in the Coffin. Like, I don't know if that's purpose for the whole Benzino track Nail in the Coffin, or is that just him mentioning, cause you know, he's going to kill MGK's career. So it's a nail in the coffin. When I heard that track, the Kill Shot, I had more lines where I was just like, oh my God, did he just say that? My favorite, everyone goes to the Biggie Tupac thing. I actually go to, I have more fans in your own city.
Yeah.
Because being one of those fans, I was like, yep.
Yep. That's 100% true.
Like, I think MGK could do a concert. I'm trying to figure out a good venue in Cleveland, but maybe he could do House of Blues. I don't know if he would pack it if Eminem was doing Brown Stadium.
No way.
Or at least anywhere, like, or maybe you have them both do Brown Stadium back to back nights. I'm almost guaranteeing you more people are going to Eminem because it's fucking Eminem. And that's what gets me. It's like, yeah, MGK, I get what you're trying to prove, but now you're doing all this. You better come up with something.
Right.
Because that's how a guy like Ja Rule killed his career.
I saw a video of shortly after Killshot was released, MGK was performing at a concert and he went to go sing his diss track at his own concert. And everybody started booing him at his own concert.
I've seen that video, but I think it was a little doctored.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard reports from people who've went. So they saw him obviously online, so I don't know if it's true or not. But there were a lot of, you know, people just kind of like backlashing after a while. Because also, too, that wasn't MGK going on tour and headline. That's MGK opening up for Fall Out Boy.
Right.
So those people that are there aren't necessarily there to see MGK, they're probably there for the most part to see Fall Out Boy. So
oh, yeah.
I don't know if I think he's headlining tours, but I don't know if they're anywhere on M's level. But even if you go three albums in for M, like what he was doing tour wise,
yeah.
There's nothing. Like, he had already done, granted, he didn't headline, but he was doing Up in Smoke with Dre, Snoop, Ice Cube, and all them. I don't know what MGK's done to compare that. And even what I was trying to say earlier, like, look at everybody that Eminem went against album-wise for those first three. We're talking about the boom of the pop stars.
Oh,
we're talking like Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, 98 Degrees, Backstreet Boys, NSYNC. he was still managed to first album number topped at number two, which says a lot for that album. And then obviously he boomed with the Marshall Mathers LP, followed up one good LP to even just go nuts with almost every single he did. I don't know if MGK has had good enough competition when it comes just on the charts, because granted, I'm older, I'm not listening to as much newer music, but I look at it like, dude, Eminem went against some hard shit because that pop trend was huge.
Well, even if you think about it now, I mean, you know, I'm a country music fan too. I mean, even country music has kind of shifted away from what it used to be. And I think no matter what genre, country, rap, hip hop, pop, it's all pop nowadays. It's all it is. It's all a form of pop, unless you really listen to some of the underground stuff or the lesser known artists. But back when Eminem was really, you know, his first three albums, you had to think he was going through, you know, the end of that grunge kind of era. You know, the alternative era was really, you know, kicking off. You had like the emo era, you know, like he was still relevant, and rap music and his style of music was still relevant.
Like I'm next thing I'm going to look at is like where each album charted the first week and compare it to what he went up against.
Right.
Compared to everything that MGK went up against those when those three albums debuted, just because I do think it's definitely looking through with rose-colored glasses that that era was tough.
Oh, yeah. Oh, 100%.
And even, like, I don't think he did well on the TRL at that time because, obviously, that's when the pop music was huge. But still, like, if you're people are going out and buying albums, and I've even thought about that, like, maybe to defend MGK, like, maybe not enough people are going out to buy albums, and that's why you did 4, 4, and 8. But I feel like if your fans are diehard, like, I have Apple Music on my phone. When Revival came out, at midnight, I downloaded, listened to it. I went to Target that day and bought a physical copy. Actually, not only for me, but for my 16, now 17-year-old niece who loves Eminem. And that's something that I think is, it's not everywhere, but having someone of that age who, like, most of M's career was before she was born, or, like, a lot of the bigger moments was before she was born, and he, like, she still loves him.
Yeah.
I don't know if MGK is going to have any of that, if any, in the next, like, 15 years. And the crazy thing, too, we're almost 20 years of Eminem.
Yeah.
Like, next year will be the 20th anniversary of the Slim Shady LP.
It's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
I was just telling you before we started recording, I had to
kind of get into that, actually.
The cassette tape, and, you know, when my mom would drive us around, I used to listen to the Slim Shady LP unedited version because I was a bad boy. And my mom's van, man, I used to take that. I used to just, the album would finish and I would rewind that and listen to it front to back again. And that really, I think, honestly, that cassette really introduced me to the love for hip hop.
Yeah.
I mean, that really, for the love of rap and kind of the flow and how it was. Because, I mean, my parents grew up on country music and, you know, 80s and 70s bands, which I love both of those genres too. But that was kind of my first feeling out of, hey, this is what I like. This is what I, you know, this is what I'm into.
I think the funny thing is when I was listening to that recently, the Slim Shady LP, like, sometimes stuff goes over your head when you're younger. Maybe you don't think about it, but in the song, I think it's Don't Give a Fuck, he says, the proof is in the pudding. Just ask Deshaun Holton. You know that line off top hand?
Yeah, yeah.
That's Proof's real name. it hit me, and I texted one of my friends who's a, you know, big Proof and M fan too. And I'm like, I just got the reference. Like, he said it, and I now know Proof's name. And I went, oh my God.
It's awesome.
Like, at that time, people didn't know Proof. Like, if you knew Proof, you were in Detroit. And then when the Marshall Mathers LP came out, you probably still didn't know Proof as much. But when Devil's Night came out, you learned who he was.
Yeah.
And a lot more has gone on with him since. And though that was one thing, because what we were talking about too, like you mentioned the cassette tape, I had the CD, but it was the edited version. Like, I think I bought it at a Kmart. And I was like, well, I'm like, this is the best I can do right now. I might have been, see if I was in the early 99, I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
So I was like right on that age, like, I could try to find it, but I wasn't getting to many stores that are record stores to buy it. So I bought the edited version. That still has a lot of like nostalgia wrapped up into it.
Oh yeah.
Like even it just being edited, I'm like, I used to listen to that album like nonstop, and I knew all the crazy little edited things, like little sound effects that they'd put in.
Yep.
And when I went back and listened to it, like, I think about a year ago, it just brought back all these memories. I'm like, this is the only edited like CD I'll go back and listen to.
Right.
And oddly enough, there was one song I never listened to was the edited version because I skipped over it. Was 97 Bonnie and Clyde. Mm-hmm. Because, like, I don't know, something about that. Like, I just heard that opening and I thought that's all it was. And I don't know if the whole song is edited. But yeah. I was like, I didn't listen to it. Then someone told me later on after I had the original copy, they're like, you know, there's a song there. I'm like, what? Like, I thought it was just this weird sound effects thing. And then obviously with Marshall, that's another thing I love. When any artist in general, like how he has 97 Bonnie and Clyde, then he has Kim that goes before it, but came in the album after it. Mm-hmm. And it tells us like whole story.
Right.
That's storytelling like that, I think, is something that's missing.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
hip hop.
Yeah. I mean, hip hop nowadays, you don't get that factor anymore. No. It's all about what kind of beat can I just try to rhyme over and not even make sense. And I think Eminem hits on that a lot in Kamikaze, you know?
All right, we're going to start to wrap this up with our fave five questions that we have here on Wrestling Cheers. So in the style of Booker T, there are more than five questions. So we will start with, as I pick randomly, one of my favorites. It's a staple for me. Bacon or sausage?
Sausage.
Okay, follow up to that. Link or patty?
Just depends on the meal. If I'm making an egg sandwich, I got to have a sausage patty. You can't have that link on there. It doesn't work well.
I've done it, though.
I mean, you can.
Desperate times call for desperate measures.
I mean, I've made contraptions out of food that I never thought I would ever eat in my life just because I was like hungry and desperate at the time. So
yeah.
I don't think making a sausage link into a sandwich is that desperate. But, I mean, obviously you're going to go with the patty if you have the choice every time.
New York style pizza or Chicago deep dish pizza? Or Chicago, let's just say Chicago style.
Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah. I like that deep dish.
That's what I love too. Because I can ask either this question or there's the other one, is Chicago deep dish pizza? That does not count as a question. But I do look at it as like, I love the Chicago style. I love the, whether it be the actual deep dish where it's just layers, layers, layers.
Yeah.
Or you have it to where the dough under the pizza or whatever you want to call that base is thicker. Either or, like, just more food. Like, who's, like, how can you not love that?
I can eat one or two slices of, you know, a Chicago style pizza and get pretty full. And then I can eat like eight, you know, regular slices of pizza and just feel like total crap about myself because they're not as filling.
Yeah. Third question, physical media or digital media?
Physical.
Physical.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's very respectable. I've had this conversation with many people. I'm definitely a mixture.
Mm-hmm.
I think it depends on what it is, but like we mentioned about with Eminem and Revival, like, I have the digital copy from Apple Music, but I do like to have that. Like, I want to be able to hold a physical copy. Like, I still got to go out and buy Kamikaze because I don't think those came out as quick for physical, but I think there's eventually going to be physical.
Yeah.
So, like, I'll go and support that because it's, if I like somebody, I'll do that. And also, too, with, I think, movies, I would like to hold on to a physical copy, but the fact that a lot of them offer digital codes.
Right.
Like, so I can just sit down on my TV, open up an app, and watch a movie and not have to, like, take anything out. Like, I do love that aspect. So, it's like it go either way.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that aspect, too, because, you know, I think a physical copy kind of holds more sentimental value to you.
Mm-hmm.
But we live in a digital age, so if you're getting anything, it's going to be digital. It's going to be streamed. It's just how it is.
Okay. Question number four, ketchup on hot dogs.
Yes.
Okay.
My dad actually is a ketchup fanatic, and there's not a whole lot that he won't put ketchup on. It kind of grosses me out. He's one of those cats that puts ketchup on macaroni and cheese.
Dude, it's good.
I mean, I'm not against it, but like, I'm really digging that mac and cheese by itself. Do you really need the ketchup?
I think it depends on the mac and cheese. There's some that's fine, but there's also sometimes I've had ones where like it adds just a better flavor.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also I've had it where I have macaroni and cheese, and then let's say, I don't know, I have chicken tenders and I'm dipping it in ketchup and it's like some ketchup gets into the macaroni and cheese, I'll still eat it. I don't think I would do it all the time, but to spice things up, like, I have no issue with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't hear a lot of people say when it comes to ketchup, but I know it's weird because like going back to the Chicago thing, like they are just like, you put ketchup on hot dogs. How dare you? That is revolting. And I'm like, I grew up. Like ketchup and mustard.
Yeah.
Like to me, that's the norm. Like you can throw anything else on there, I'm fine. But I don't know, just ketchup is just, it goes perfect with a hot dog.
And it's funny because I'm not a tomato fan. I hate tomatoes. But I love ketchup.
That's a very common thing, too.
I mean, ketchup tastes a lot differently. You know, it's got a lot more ingredients. But still, like, a lot of people are like, you don't like tomatoes, but you love ketchup. What are you, a weirdo? Well, kind of.
All right. Question number 5. We'll go with the Wilkman question from Kick Out of 2 podcast. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie?
I mean, it was based. I mean,
it is personal preference. And then that's I mean, that's why it's a question.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, because it's still themed around Christmas time, and I mean, Christmas is referenced a lot, and I mean,
see, I had a friend of mine put it in a way that I really enjoy, but trying to get people to think about it, they're like, no, that's not right. Is there's actually two different kinds of movies with that. There's Christmas movies and there's holiday movies.
Okay.
So you have movies like Die Hard, which you could take like, okay, it takes place at Christmas. It's a Christmas movie. But is it your Christmas movie like a holiday movie like Home Alone or
No.
Jingle All the Way? Like, to me, like that is where it differs. Yeah. But I throw it out there wording like that because that's the big question.
Or the plot is around getting the toy or Santa visiting. Yeah.
Like Christmas Story. I love Christmas Story. Like, to me, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
And like, to me, that I understand why that's a Christmas movie. That's a holiday movie. But there are some movies like Rocky IV, like that fight takes place Christmas.
Yeah.
Is that a Christmas movie?
No.
Exactly.
I see your point. I see your point 100%.
I just threw this out to my girlfriend recently. I'm like, oh, I just to kind of go with the way people go with crazy moves. I'm like, oh, I got a new favorite Halloween movie. She's like, what's that? I'm like, Coco. She's like, that's not a Halloween movie.
No.
I'm like, it takes place during the Day of the Dead. That takes place right around Halloween, but it's just more like proving a point. Like, yeah, if something takes place around a holiday, doesn't mean it's that holiday.
Right, right.
So, all right. And this, follow up to that one that I do ask, what is your favorite Christmas movie?
Jingle All the Way.
Nice. I love that movie.
Yep.
Have you ever heard like the techno remix of Put That Cookie Down?
No.
I'm going to play that for you after we're done.
Please do.
I don't get shit for signaling here. I'll have to boot it up later after party. I'll play it for you.
Okay.
But oh my god, it's someone taking that like put that cookie like it's that whole bit with him and Phil Hartman. Anyway, the sixth question, which I tailor around my guest, we kind of talked about it earlier, but I didn't officially ask you, is who is your goat for rap?
What's the scenario? Just in general.
If I say who's the greatest of all time, you will say,
I gotta say Tupac.
Okay.
I mean, I'm a huge Tupac fan. I mean, I think a lot of general rap conversations are based around whether or not you like Biggie or Tupac better. I think that's kind of the icebreaker.
Yeah.
I think Tupac kind of ushered in, you know, kind of the N.W.A. ushered in kind of more of the hip hop and the rap that we're used to. But
gangster rap, yeah.
But I mean, I think N.W.A.'s, you know, career was, as solo artist, everything took off. You know, Dre found, you know, Snoop and like did other things. But I mean, as a group, they weren't around off, you know, very long.
Yeah.
And it was right before Easy passed away that they thought about, you know, kind of reigniting things. But Pac was around long enough to really make you want more and kind of respect what he did and usher in that era.
It was kind of the conversation I had with PB, because for me, it's Eminem, but I feel like you look at a career of Biggie and Tupac. So if people say like, oh, I think the greatest of all time is Biggie, or I think it's Tupac, I disagree with that. But I look at, they did accomplish a lot in their very short time here. And if they would have had that track record of like 20-year career, which we would be close to for both, like we'd be over past it for both of them right now if they were alive, they probably would have created some crazy shit, like especially Tupac. Tupac was such an activist. Like, imagine if he was alive right now.
Well, that's another thing that makes them seem like they're so, you know, so high on the pedestal and kind of at the top is because they didn't have time to mess up. You know, their careers were so short-lived that we didn't really get to see the bad side of Tupac or the bad side of Biggie that, you know, we see with Kanye now. You know, Kanye, you know, he had all those hits coming up, and now you're kind of seeing a guy who's kind of a ghost of his former self trying to be relevant. It kind of makes you think, would Biggie and Tupac be that eventually?
They would. I can't imagine all the stuff they would have went through. Look, I even said with PB that I think Machiavelli would have been a completely different persona for Tupac. Mm-hmm. He would have took it like, no, he would have went the kayfabe route. He would have been like, I'm not Tupac, I'm Machiavelli. I don't know that Tupac guy.
I'm a huge conspiracy theorist fan. Okay. And I love to always go into people like top 15 reasons why Tupac isn't dead. You know, at the end of the day, I really think he is, you know, passed away. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the supporting like conspiracy facts about why he may still be walking this earth is just mind blowing, which would be a conversation for another day.
Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts or last minute plugs before we go?
Just thank you for the show. For the time here, and looking forward to the OCW show tonight. Yeah.
All right. Any social media plugs before we go?
You can hit me at FlexJordan81 on Twitter, and then FlexJordan on Facebook as well.
All right, man. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
What's up, everybody? This is Alex Worldwide Keller coming to you live here for Thrift Store. Wait, it's not Thrift Store Driver? Wait a minute. Wrestling who? Wrestling Cheers. Where everybody knows your name. I know my name. It's Alex Worldwide Keller, and you're listening to Wrestling Cheers. And I want to tell you all about Wrestling Cheers t-shirts at whatamaneuver.net. It's a heck of a shirt because where everybody knows your name, and wrestling is a game, and the game is pain. And pain is what we feel, and what we feel, it's real. Whatamaneuver.net, Wrestling Cheers, do it up for your boy, Alex Worldwide Keller.
There we go, the former OCW Ohio Heritage Champion, Flex Jordan. And, you know, that it was a fun conversation. Oddly enough, between both interviews, I had fun with both of them, but neither of them was I looking at a timer. I was just kind of going with the flow of the conversation. And then we get into the Fave Five questions. So it was really cool to have them actually be really close in time. So I hope you enjoyed both of these episodes that we've had the past 2 weeks of interviews. Next week, we'll be heading back to AIW, and we got Zero Cool coming up, so that's going to be fun. And also, I want to give a big, huge shout-out. I did the one before to Jeremy for hooking us up backstage, but also the new OCW heavyweight champion, Juice Jennings, won it at the last show, which actually, normally, when I haven't done an OCW episode in a while, I sit down and I just rattle off a lot of different results. Well, the last time I was at OCW, the arena, it was Supernova, which was when Robbie successfully defended the OCW Heavyweight Championship against Ryan Burke. And then normally, because for those who don't know, OCW Arena is kind of in a place where I don't get really good reception. It's at an old school, and I don't know what just that location, or I think it's the building itself is blocking some signal. So I get not very good reception at all, can barely live tweet. So I have the notepad app for the iPhone. I use that to just keep notes of all the matches. So whenever after the show, I go out and live tweet, or technically not live tweet at that point, you know, but still like getting out the results. I have something to go by to be like, okay, this is who won. I totally don't want to screw anything up. So this one was a little bit different. There was a pre-show match. Lord Thomas the Brute beat Trent Riley as the pre-show match. I accidentally put in my notes post-show. I think I put that in the tweets. No one called me out on it, but thank you. Match number one, Ron Mathis beat Pat the Bruiser. Match number two, Flex Jordan beat Brandon Fields. Match number three, Gino DiCapo beat James the Security Guard. Match number four, Crosshairs Kelly beat Matt Taylor. Match number five, the Electrock Company successfully defended their new OCW Tag Team Championships against Grant Andrews and Bruce Gray, and the main event, Juice Jennings pinned Robbie Starr in a triple threat match that also included former OCW Heavyweight Champion Jimmy Shane to become the new two-time OCW Heavyweight Champion. I'm guessing, as far as I do understand, the DBI, which will be, as of this podcast when it comes out, it will be next week's episode, or next weekend, we'll be covering AIW. Unfortunately, we won't be at the DBI this year because it's running the same day as AIW. apologies to them, but I do believe the OCW Heavyweight Championship is going to be defended for the first time at the DBI. So if you can't make it to Cleveland for AIW Zero Cool, I would strongly suggest to make it down to Canton, Ohio, the J-Babe Community Center, I believe that's what it's called, for DBI 7. All right, let's wrap this show up. And of course, you can find us on social media on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Facebook.com/WrestlingCheers, Twitter.com/WrestlingCheers, and Instagram.com/WrestlingCheers. You can find myself just the same way at Heavyset330. Facebook.com/Heavyset330. Twitter.com/Heavyset330. Instagram.com/Heavyset330. Email, if you so choose to desire, WrestlingCheers@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to this wonderful podcast. If you don't already, on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, YouTube, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Podbean, WrestlingCheers.podbean.com. If there's any place that you want to listen to us on, any app that you can't find us, those are the main ones. But just in case, I'm always open to suggestions like, hey, I use this particular podcasting app. You're not available on there. I'll make us available on there, and I will add it to the list. But mostly, those are the main ones, and pretty much if you're on Apple Podcasts, you're on a lot of the other ones automatically, but those are the ones that I've had to submit the feed to, and Podbean is just, you know, where the podcast is through. So anyway, we have the merch store over at whatamaneuver.net, and please check out all of our friends on the Trending Topics Network, such as All Beer Inside, Your Vision Showcase, and Old School at the Movies. Check out our other podcasting friends, such as Pod Van Dam, Adults, Penavitza Podcasting, Center Stage, Super Fantastic Podcast, Road Home from Wrestling, Kick Out of Two, The IndieCast, The Sobros Network, and The Big Gold Belt Podcast. I want to throw out, too, if anybody's ever noticed, there are some podcasts that I at one time mentioned, but don't mention anymore. All but one of them are still, like, I'm still cool with, but I don't mention them. I just want to throw this out there so it's, you know, that it's because they're not producing really episodes right now for one reason or the other. If I don't mention one of these, if the podcast you might be thinking about is not one of these next three, it's because I'm just no longer affiliated with them. But we have the Chris Clems Cavs Cast, Wingcast, a Wingman podcast with Steve Guy, and Let the Hate Flow Through You, which all of them, oddly enough, are on the Lousy Weather Media Network. All of which are taking their own hiatuses for one reason or another. So I just don't promote them, but I want to let obviously everybody know I'm still good with Chris Clem. I'm still good with Steve Guy, and let the hate flow through you. I'm still good with Jeremy Shear and El Hordano Diablo, but unfortunately they don't do the show anymore. I don't know if it's coming back. If it does, it's going to be done with Jeremy Shear. El Hordano Diablo is still great friend of the podcast. Eventually, we're going to have him on. He was supposed to be on not too long ago, but things fell through, and it was what it was. So just want to throw out those updates. So those people, you should check out those podcasts, up some of the back catalog stuff, especially Let the Hate Flow Through You. It's a great show, and some of that is kind of timeless. All right, check out our other friends, such as Thrift Store Jobber, Rebel Life Media, The Savage Stash, Set Tab Photo, Ringside Sots Photography, Sickening Pictures, NEO Sports Insiders, and the official graphic designer of Wrestling Cheers, Moy Boy Designs. That will do it for us here on Wrestling Cheers, where everybody knows your name, even if you are the most dangerous man in professional wrestling. Later. Making your way in the world today takes everything you got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Would you like to get away? Sometimes you wanna go where everybody knows your name. Yeah.